Branch NMLS number 33041. Rick Rittman's NMLS number 664589. Equal housing lender. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Our branch NMLS is 33041. Now, here's your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I truly appreciate it. It's a great Saturday, and I know you have things you could be doing. I appreciate it very much that you're joining us. First, I want to ask, if you know anyone or if you happen to own a small business or you know anybody who owns a small business, I am looking to highlight small businesses on my show. I really would like to have people on and help them put their businesses out there so people can hear about them. So if you have a small business or know somebody who does, please go to hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com and let me know, and we'll see if we can't get them on air. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. But first, let's talk about mortgage terms. And I know they can be confusing. And I know that I just talked to so many people that even, you know, people who've done 10, 12 mortgages, they have a pretty good handle on the different terms that we're talking about. But even some of the terms change, you know, over time. So I just thought it'd be really important. And I also know there's a lot of people out there who are new to either buying a home or haven't refinanced ever in the past. And they just need a little bit more information. So I thought I would go through the terms, try to help you make you a little bit more familiar with some of our industry terms. The first one I want to talk about is an appraisal. So the appraisal is the appraisal of value of the property. Some people will get this confused with an inspection, because the appraiser goes to the house and they appraise the property. They go in the house. And it is an inspection, but it's an inspection for value, not an inspection for condition. And so the appraiser's responsibility is they go in the house. First, they do most of their work before they ever get to the house. They're going to run the comps. They're going to look at what's available in the neighborhood or what's sold so that they have some idea of value. And when they come to the house and they go through the house, really what they're looking at is they're looking to come up with the square footage of the property, the condition of the property. They aren't going to, unless it's just, you know, a hole in the roof or something, they're not going to say, hey, this needs a new roof. That's just not what they do. For the most part, you get very, very little back on the condition. That's a little different on FHA than it is on conventional. You'll get more on FHA than you will on conventional. There's certain things with FHA like chip paint that they require the appraiser to list. So the appraiser would list that, and that would be something that would need to be fixed before you could close on the home. But the appraisal is an appraisal of value for the most part. It is not an inspection of the quality of the home. So it doesn't take the place of a home inspection if you're looking to do that, or looking to buy a house and don't think the appraisal is what you need. You need an appraisal. We're going to require one. But a home inspection is also something that we don't require, but it might be something that is definitely worth doing. Another one, the APR, and this is the annual percentage rate. And this one is kind of it's a tough one, because people will call and they want to know the interest rate. And is that the APR rate? Well, the interest rate, the actual interest rate you paid is different than the APR rate or the annual percentage rate. The annual percentage rate has closing costs, prepaid interest, has mortgage insurance, all that added in to come up with a number. So it's a calculation. And I would say it's almost always higher than the APR. Sometimes it's not on an ARM type product, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But on an ARM, a non-fixed rate mortgage, the APR could be lower. But if you're doing a fixed rate, which almost everybody is right now, your APR is going to be higher. And many people will use APR to shop for the rate. They'll go, well, this is a better deal than that one because the APR is lower than that one. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. Some people will include different things in their APR. So I truly believe that the easiest way to look at what the best offer is what is the interest rate and what are the costs? And if you know all the costs, the closing costs, the things that change by lender, not the escrows because they don't change by lender, but what are the closing costs? What is the appraisal going to cost? What is the lender fees? What are the title fees? What are my total costs? And then is there any lender credit against those compared to my interest rate? So that's what you want to know, what the net costs are. The APR is a way of showing that, but it can be a little confusing. Even though the idea behind it was to make it easier for shopping for a mortgage, I think sometimes it's just it gets confusing for people, and partly because people don't always use the same pieces in their APR. The next one is term. You'll hear us talk about term, and term is the length of the loan. So, you know, many people today are doing a 30-year fixed rate. That's the term, 30-year. If they do a 15-year, that's the term, 15-year. Where it gets a little bit more confusing is on a variable rate mortgage, an ARM product, adjustable rate mortgage. So let's say the rate is 5%, and it's a 5/1 ARM, but it's a 30-year term. 30-year mortgage. So that's a 30-year term. You might not think it. You might think it's a 5-year, but it's not a 5-year. It's a 30-year because it's a 5/1 ARM, fixed for 5 years, and then it can change every year for the next 25 years. So that the term of that mortgage, even though it's an ARM product, is still 30 years. And the term matters as you're comparing things. How long it's going to take you to pay off the loan? All those type of things. They matter. That matters. The next piece, and this is really important, is the difference between a pre-approval and a pre-qualification. And this is important, especially in the market that we have today, when you have so many homes selling so quickly and offers, you know, 4, 5, 6 offers coming in on a home. You want to make sure you present the best qualifications that you possibly can. And the best qualification is a pre-approval letter. A pre-approval letter means and should mean that we've verified your income, we've verified your assets, we've verified your job, and we've verified your credit. We may not have had you the file underwritten, but we've verified the important pieces of the mortgage application, and that we know we're going to get an approval, or we feel very confident we're going to get an approval because we've verified that information. And so a pre-approval letter is looked at much stronger than a pre-qualification letter. So if you're looking to buy a home and you're talking to a lender, you call me, we're going to want, don't be upset. We need this information because it's important that you present yourself in the best possible light with that pre-approval. Now, let's and contrast the pre-qualification. The pre-qualification is basically you tell me what you think your income is, you tell me what assets you believe you have, you tell me the basic information, all the information I'm going to need. And I think the real problem with a pre-qualification is we haven't pulled credit. Credit is most people tell us the correct income. And if it sounds like it's going to be an issue, or if it becomes certain issues, we'll get we'll need more documentation. Most people don't tell you they have $30,000 sitting in the bank, and they don't have $30,000 sitting in the bank. So you can pretty much depend on what somebody tells you. But credit is extremely important to see before we issue a pre-approval letter, and it's not necessarily pulled with a pre-qualification letter. And if you don't have credit pulled, then we really don't know, because there are 50% of all credit reports have erroneous information on them. Some of that erroneous information is not important, but others is very, very important. And we need to see that credit report. That credit report matters, and it matters greatly, and it makes the difference between whether somebody can purchase a home or not purchase a home. And in today's market, you know, it used to be, you know, you could get a credit score even in the 580 and above on an FHA. You could get that finance on an FHA mortgage. Today, that's very, very difficult. You really need a 620 or a 640 to get that finance. And then it depends on what it actually says on the report. A lot of people just look at the report. They look at the credit score and they go, okay, they're good. Well, no, you got to look at the report. because it's not everything is equal. So you do have to look at it to make sure what the report says and what's being reported, so that you can give people the accurate information, the accurate either pre-qualification or pre-approval letter, so that they have what they need to go out and buy a house. And again, I would encourage everybody to do a pre-approval letter if you're looking to buy a home. Get the lender your income information. Normally that's W-2s for 2 years and pay stubs for 30 days. And get us the bank statements and investment statements and those things that we need so that we can do a very high quality pre-approval for you and not have to do a pre-qualification, which would really hurt your offer, especially in a market like this. After the break, we're going to talk more about the terms, and especially we'll talk about what do closing costs mean.
You're listening to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Now back to your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me. You know, we've been talking about the mortgage terms, and these terms are important. I know it may seem rudimentary for some, but it is important that we talk about the terms, that people understand the terms. We've talked about the appraisal, the APR, the term, what the term means, pre-approval. And we talked a little bit about the pre-qualification. It's just not as strong as a pre-approval. And so it's not as good of a letter that you need when you're making an offer on a home. But sometimes that's all we can get. And so that's what we do. And then replace it with a pre-approval once an offer is accepted or once the seller says, hey, we need a pre-approval letter.
Now it's time for Questions with the Gurus.
You know, this one's a sign of the times. I had a call from John who he was told by a lender that he didn't have to have an appraisal on his home when he was refinancing. And he wondered why. And he wondered why he didn't have to have the appraisal. And it's one of those things that we have today. There is a program through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae where we run it, and it tells us whether we need to have an appraisal. And once if one lender gets it, all lenders who are under the program have that ability. It's not like one person can give it to you, and like I could give it to you and somebody else can't. As long as they do the 1 day certainty, they can offer the same thing. So what it is, though, it looks at your home, the neighborhood, the homes that have sold. If you think about it, they have so many homes financed. They know what the homes in that area are valued at. And they look at what you think the value is, what we put down as the value. They look at the assets that you have, and they make that decision on what we need, whether we need that appraisal based on that. And now, what's the advantage of not having an appraisal? Well, there's huge advantages to not having an appraisal. Number one, you don't have to pay for the appraisal. And so that's a big deal. Number two, we now have the value. So we don't have to worry that the appraisal is going to come in at a different value. We know exactly what it is because they've accepted that value. Now, once in a while, if things change down the road, while we're processing, you know, you raise your loan amount, you change to cash out, things like that, it could change whether we need the appraisal. But once we have that, if everything stays the same, then we should be good to go. We don't have the time spent on the appraisal. We don't have the money spent on the appraisal. We don't have the unknown of what that value is going to come in at. And to me, that's a pretty big deal, because it is one of those things that can hold up or stop a loan from going through. We even get them once in a while on a purchase. So you get that one, you know, you have to decide if you want to move forward with that, but that takes away that one issue, you know, one of the issues. If you don't need an appraisal, you know, Freddie and Fannie are comfortable with that value. So we should be good. And that can really help you and speed things up as you go through the process. So it's kind of a sign of the times, and it's certainly something that can happen if you hear, hey, you don't need an appraisal. That's why you don't need an appraisal. Let's get back to the terms. And the next term I want to talk about is closing costs. Closing costs is important, and because when people talk about closing costs, not everybody talks about the same thing. Some people will talk about closing costs, and what they talk about is their closing costs, so the lender closing costs. And lender closing costs could be, you know, like their origination fee, could be the appraisal, and the credit report. It could be the loan doc prep fees, tax service fees, underwriting fees, processing fees, credit report, flood cert, all those things. And those could be the closing costs. But those aren't really, in my mind, all of the closing costs. There's more closing costs than that. So if you call somebody and they say, yeah, the closing costs are, you know, X amount of dollars, and they include the appraisal, the origination fee of X, and the credit report, then you aren't getting the full story, because you have to have fees from, or you're going to have fees from the title company. And those fees are going to be added in. And in my mind, those fees are closing costs. So the closing costs are going to include the title fees. And the title fees are going to be determined by which title company. They're also determined by the dollar amount of your mortgage and whether it's a purchase or a refinance. So all that comes into play. So the normal closing costs depend on the value of the house, the loan amount, all that stuff. So we can't tell you exactly what it's going to be, but you want to compare apples to apples when you're doing it. So you want all the closing costs. Now, what's not closing costs? Since we're talking about closing costs, what are not closing costs are what's called prepaid items. And we'll talk about, or prepaid items are like your property taxes that are being escrowed. You prepay those so that we can pay them when they come due. The next time they're due, homeowners insurance, mortgage insurance if you have it, flood insurance if you have it, those things, prepaid interest on a purchase from the day you close till the end of the month, on most refinances from the day you fund till the end of the month. Those are all things that are costs that you're going to have, but they aren't closing costs. But when you're looking, you want to know what closing costs are, and you want to compare. When you're comparing, you want to compare so that you have that you're comparing the correct numbers, so that you actually are making sure that you understand and you know what you're getting. The next one I want to talk about is seller concessions. I think this is a big one. And a seller concession is when you make an offer on a home, you may ask the seller to pay for your closing costs and prepaid items, you know, those type of things. There's certain things you may ask them. Those are concessions from the seller. So the seller may, let's say you said you wanted $2,500 in seller concessions. That's what a seller concession is. It's them giving you whatever they conceded to, whatever they told you they would give you in your offer. And so at closing, if they'd given you $2,500, that would go against whatever the closing costs were. And plus, if there were prepaids, plus any prepaids, if that was allowed, whatever you'd made it out to be, that's what it would go towards. It would lower the amount of money you had to bring to closing. It wouldn't lower your down payment, but it would lower the amount of money you need to bring to closing because the seller was bringing money for you in the concession. And when a seller looks at that, now this is a market where a lot of times they may not like a seller concession. But when a seller looks at a seller concession, what they normally would look at is if you offer a $200,000 for a house and you want $2,500 in seller's concession and they have somebody else offer $197,000, your offer is actually a little better than that other one. Your offer is actually $197,500. It's $500 better because they're getting $200,000. But they're netting $197,500 after the concession, where the other offer was $197,000. So that's how a seller's going to look at it. But that's what it is. It's just they're giving you money to pay for something that you have in your purchase agreement, which is allowable, you know, by the lender. Let's talk about what a fixed rate mortgage is. It sounds kind of silly, but a fixed rate, since there are differences, there's a fixed rate, there's adjustable rate. We'll talk about both of them. Fixed rate mortgage just means the rate is fixed for the term of the mortgage. Remember, term is the length of time the mortgage is. So a 30-year mortgage is 360 months, 30 years. That's the term. And if it's a fixed rate, the rate that you get is the rate that's good for all 30 years. As long as you have that mortgage until you pay it off, that's the rate. And that's what a fixed rate mortgage is. An adjustable rate mortgage means that the adjustable rate, it can change. The rate can go up, the rate can go down. Now, it can go up and down based on a variety of things, but it has a margin and an index. The margin is the fixed piece of a adjustable rate mortgage. The fixed piece means, let's say it's the margin is 2.25. So that would be the margin. And that would be fixed through the entire term of that mortgage. If it's a 30-year adjustable rate, it's 2.25. But the margin is added to the index. The index, let's say it's the one-year treasury. So the margin and index are added together, and then you could also have what's called a floor rate. The floor rate would be that's as low as they're going to let that rate be. So let's say you had a 5/1 arm, and it had a floor rate of 4%. Now, you may get an introductory rate for the first 5 years under that 4%, but after you get past that 5 years, then the lowest that rate's going to be is whatever that floor rate is. It's going to be the margin plus the index, but the floor rate is the lowest it would be. So if the margin plus index was 3.75, the floor was 4, your rate would be 4%. There's one other caveat to this, or something called caps. And you probably hear people talk about, 2.6 caps, 2.26 caps, 6.26 caps. Those are just basically the first number is the amount the arm can adjust up or down at the first adjustment. So if you have a 2.6 cap, that means on a 5/1 arm at 61 months, 5 years and 1 month, that rate can go up 2%. That's the highest it can go. So if you were at 3%, it couldn't go higher than 5%. And it doesn't matter if the margin and index would take it to 7%, it would only go to 5% because that's the highest it can adjust. The last number, if you have two numbers, the last number, let's say it's never go up. So if your rate was 3.5%, it can go up as high as 9.5. So it could go up from 3.5, it could go up 6, so it could go to 9.5. And so those are your caps and margins. Now, if you have like a 2.2 or let's say a 6.26 cap, that would normally be on a longer term arm product like a 10/1 arm or 7/1 arm. The 6 then, it can go up 6 the first adjustment. Remember, that's the first one, that's the first adjustment. So it could go up the whole amount the first adjustment. Any year after that, it can only go up or down 2. So if it went up the full 6, so it went, let's say, first 5 years, it went to 9.5, and then it could drop as low as 7.5 at the next year. For the next year, and then it can go up and down every year, but it can never ever go up more than that 6. So it can never go more than the 9.5. So that'd be the highest it would ever. So that's what your margin and index and caps are, and what a floor rate is. That's important to know if you're looking at an arm product. You should make sure that if you do look at an arm product that you're talking to the lender and they explain it to you and they understand what it is, because it is. I have heard people try to explain what an arm is to people. And they really don't understand an arm, and you really need to understand it before you get into it. It can be a great mortgage. I have been on an arm for a long time. I watch rates every day. So I have been on an arm for a long time, and it can be a great mortgage. Right now, a new arm, the fixed rates. So it's just one of those things you want to look at and you want to understand. Let's talk about debt-to-income ratios. It's another piece of the puzzle that we look at. We look at it a lot. It's very important on being approved. You have to have the debt-to-income ratios have to be in line. So the debt-to-income ratios, you have two ratios. You have a housing ratio, and that's your front ratio, some people call it, but you have a housing ratio. The housing ratio is your housing expenses, your principal, your interest, your taxes, your homeowner's insurance, your mortgage insurance, any flood insurance, and your homeowner's association dues. All of those fees compared to your income give us your housing ratio or your front ratio. And depending on the program and things like that is what that ratio needs to be. The back ratio is all those same numbers plus all other minimum debt payments compared to your income. And again, that ratio depends on the program and everything else. Now, some of the confusion can happen is, let's say you have some student loan debt and you don't have any payments on the student loan debt yet. They're deferred. Well, those payments still have to be counted. So we have to add payments to that to count those. So that's going to be added. But the debt-to-income ratio, again, is very important. It's one of those things that is really one of the first things that we look at and that we're going to really watch and consider and is going to be a big piece of the approval process to make sure you're approved. The next piece I want to talk about is mortgage insurance. For a lot of people, mortgage insurance is a reality. There's two different types of mortgage insurance. Well, there's more than that, but the basics are PMI, which is private mortgage insurance, and MIP, which is mortgage insurance premium. The real difference is one's for conventional mortgages and one's for FHA. PMI is a conventional mortgage. MIP is an FHA, and that's because MIP is not private. It's a federal program. So it's a monthly, it's mortgage insurance premium. And then you have two ways to pay it. On PMI, the private mortgage insurance, the conventional, you have two ways. You can pay it monthly, or you can do what's called single premium. Single premium means they give you one premium, you pay it up front. Many times you can finance it into the loan, and then you don't have any more PMI payments. So it's just you finance it in, you pay a little bit higher payment because of it financed in, but you no longer make monthly mortgage insurance payments. Monthly insurance payments you pay every month until you get to either an 80% loan to value in most cases or 78% loan to value, depending on when you want to get out of it. There's some ways you can get out of it early, things like that that we'd need to discuss. I won't talk about it now. Mortgage insurance premium is your FHA, and mortgage insurance premium is paid monthly, but FHA also has what's called, here we called it single premium, but FHA calls it more of a funding fee, an FHA funding fee, and they have both upfront mortgage insurance and monthly mortgage insurance they have on their mortgages. And again, it's just one of those things we got to talk about and look at. I did one the other day and showed, and it was so much better for the customer because of their credit score than a conventional. But then other people, the conventional is better. We really have to compare both of them. And last but not least, we're running out of time, but I want to talk about small businesses. And I really want to talk to people who, you know, self-employed small businesses that would like to come on the show and talk about their business, let people know who they are, what they do, and why people should come to them and work with them, and shop with them, buy from them. I really want to help promote those businesses. I think in this the way the economy is, what's going on in the world today, I think it's extremely important. I'd really really want to help and get people on the show. So if you have anybody, if you're self-employed, you know anybody that's self-employed, you think they could benefit from coming on the show and talking about their business and what they do so that we can get that word out there, I think that would be great. Just let me know. Contact me at hardworkingmortgageguy.com. That's hardworkingmortgageguy.com. And we'll hopefully be able to talk about it and get you on the show or get whoever you're referring to on the show. Again, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Have a great Saturday, and I hope you join me next week.